the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, says a new rule protects our waterways from pollution and promotes economic growth. The Navigable Waters Protection Rule keeps safeguards for large bodies of water already in place, and it removes protections for isolated wetlands and water bodies that are intermittent streams. We're talking about these regulations meant to keep our waterways clean. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we wonder, what do you want to know about water regulations? How do they affect your work or land that you own? And what role do you think the federal government should take in protecting our water, even small ponds and wetlands? And where do you think the state should have authority? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Morgan Robertson is a professor in the UW-Madison Department of Geology and the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. He previously worked for the EPA Wetlands Division in Washington, D.C. He helped draft the 2008 Wetlands Compensation Rule. Morgan, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
The Trump administration announced the Navigable Waters Protection Rule last month. We heard the administrator say this protects water and it's good for industry. What does it actually do?
It's a significant sort of step back on what the Clean Water Act actually protects. And, you know, the Clean Water Act, 1972, has had a definition of jurisdiction. What waters does it cover? Wetlands, streams, what kind of streams, coastal waters. And that definition has, you know, fluctuated since the early 70s. But this is the most dramatic sort of scaling back of that definition in the Clean Water Act's 48-year history.
And until now, I guess, what kind of regulations or restrictions have been in place on these smaller bodies of water? Because the rule doesn't change it for all bodies of water.
No, there are protected waters under the new rule. I think the most waters that are now not protected that are most remarkable are sort of ephemeral streams. They've always that is streams that run only after rainfall or snowmelt. Those have always been protected under the Clean Water Act. And so you have to remember the Clean Water Act has two parts. There's a program which deals with filling waters of the United States, and that's what we often think of as the wetlands program that protects us from or protects wetlands from being filled. But there's also the waste program, the pollution program, which prevents industry or anybody else from dumping pollution into streams and wetlands. So when you take a huge chunk of the nation's streams out from under that protection, it sort of creates a situation where pipes carrying industrial effluent can go into ephemeral streams. And that's, I think, one of the most concerning consequences of the rule.
But if these waters are small, they're isolated, why should we be regulating their use? Because it seems like you're saying this is a big problem if we stop regulating it.
It is. And isolated, ephemeral streams aren't isolated. They flow into intermittent and perennial streams. So anything you put in an ephemeral stream, again, it's flowing only during rainfall or during snowmelt, it's going to eventually end up in a perennial stream. Isolated waters are a slightly different question because that would be like an isolated wetland. In Wisconsin, you think of your pothole wetlands and kettle hole wetlands. Those have been not protected by the Clean Water Act since 2001, since the Supreme Court decision. It pretty dramatically changed the landscape of protection in the upper Midwest, where we have a lot of these isolated wetlands. But Wisconsin was first in the nation in kind of doing a fix law to define isolated waters of Wisconsin. So although the change in the Clean Water Act rule doesn't change our protection of isolated waters, it does replace an Obama-era rule, which did protect those isolated waters, which had reasserted Clean Water Act protection over them. So there's a lot of kind of whiplashing of policy going on, and it places importance on Wisconsin's rule.
And I will say, when the Obama-era rules came out, there were a lot of questions about them, even things like, does this mean that the ditch that fills up with water is now something that we have regulated? I mean, they are big, complicated regulations, and I think it's hard for people who don't work in this all the time to fully understand what they mean.
It is, and I like to just recommend that people just sort of skip to the end when they see a new regulation coming out in the Federal Register. I was involved in the Wetland Compensation Rule, which is about 200 pages. Now, the business end is about 5 pages. The business end of the Obama rule and the Trump rule is reasonably short. I mean, it's under 10 pages. So the first 95% is prologue and sort of justification, review of public comments. One of my favorite parts of the Obama rule is sort of subparagraph G, puddles. where it's sort of listing the things that aren't covered and have never been covered and will never be covered.
Including puddles?
That's just okay. It. You know, you can argue about wordy government regulation, but that's pretty concise. Puddles, ditches, artificial wetlands, artificial, you know, features that under the Obama rule, anything that didn't have a clear bed and bank, that wasn't kind of a naturally evolved stream system, not covered. It has never been covered. This rhetoric of the Clean Water Act is going to cover puddles is kind of evergreen, and it always shows up in these debates, but it's never been true.
We're speaking with Morgan Robertson, who used to work for the EPA, where he helped draft water quality regulations, and we're discussing a new rule that is going into effect about navigable waters, changing some of the safeguards for smaller bodies of water, isolated wetlands, intermittent streams. And we're taking your calls this hour. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let us know, are you worried about the quality of your drinking water, or do you think the government should or shouldn't be trying to protect our wetlands? And do you think that we can handle it on our own, or that it should be left to businesses and individuals, or do we need the regulations? We are at 800-642-1234. Morgan, Wisconsin sees its share of flooding problems each year. Scientists argue that wetlands can help prevent flooding. Could this new rule affect wetlands?
Yes. Yeah. Now, Wisconsin is lucky enough, as I said, to have had its own wetlands law since 2001. States like Minnesota has had one since 1991. Many states have their own wetland protection laws. But, flooding is one of the main reasons, especially to protect wetlands. When you have increased severity of extreme events with climate change, you definitely have a higher risk of flooding. And wetlands are this kind of detention basins in the landscape that keep our downtowns and our basements from getting flooded. So as the recent change in wetlands protection in Wisconsin, the 2018 bill, exempted wetlands in urban areas that are over 1 acre from protection under the Wisconsin law. And those are the wetlands that do the work. Those are the wetlands, the small wetlands in urban areas are the ones that are the detention areas that keep catastrophic flooding from hitting our neighborhoods.
And let's further explain that, because the wetlands keep and hold in the water so that it doesn't just flow across the sidewalks into the basement. I mean, like, the makeup of the wetlands is what allows them to kind of act almost as a sponge.
Yeah, I mean, the word we use in wetland science is detention, which, it is a sponge. There are basins all over the landscape that, again, that the word would be sort of desynchronizing flows, meaning the water doesn't all arrive at the same spot at the same time. And it just makes sure the water flows in a sort of, less extreme way to any one point in the landscape. As we lose those small wetlands, water's going to arrive in a much quicker and higher volume way at any point.
But who stands to benefit from no longer having these rules about the small wetlands or the intermittent streams in place?
Well, I mean, if you look at who is kind of pushing for this change in regulation, I mean, the home builders groups and kind of interests around development are always in the forefront of trying to push for a less extensive jurisdictional definition. They're the ones who are building in sort of peri-urban and urban areas that often run into issues of wetland filling. They're not so concerned with the stream and water quality components of the rule, but they do want to, run into fewer problems when they try and develop a site. There's a lot of agricultural support behind changing the rule, and I'm always a little sort of curious about where that comes from, because farmers have been exempt from the Clean Water Act since 1977, the exemptions which cover agriculture and silviculture in terms of the wetlands program especially. There are other consequences for farmers filling wetlands that have to do with losing their federal crop program benefits, but that's not the Clean Water Act. It does allow them, though, they do have water quality permits for facilities that discharge through a pipe, so a manure lagoon or any kind of, facility on a farm that would discharge waste through a pipe. And to the extent that they're no longer discharging into a water of the United States, if it's an ephemeral stream, then they don't have to have a permit. And that is extremely concerning, and I can see where that would be a cost saving for the agricultural community.
Yeah, so this rule, it does affect farmers.
It affects farmers in limited ways, right? I mean, there is this exemption that's longstanding and not going anywhere that really exempts them from large chunks of the Clean Water Act.
Let's bring in a call now. Jen from Markeson is on the line. Jen, welcome to the morning show.
Thank you. I would like to mention that wetlands are used for cleaning water. They're the best filter for removing all kinds of pollutants. And small streams always go into large streams. So by defiling any small body of water, we're going to defile larger ones.
So, Jen, yeah, it sounds like you prefer to lean in the favor of protecting all waters, no matter how small. Morgan, what do you think about Jen's take?
There's an undeniable logic to that. I used to work in an engineering firm, and I think the only joke in my office was, water flows downhill. And, you know, I like to... It's
love that that's your joke. Right.
We were engineers. No offense. But you know, the truth is, you know where it's going to go. And, you know, people ask me, why are wetlands so important? And that's kind of like, for candidates, the why do you want to be president question. Because there's so many answers, and there's not all of them will work for all people. But for me, wetlands and streams are, you know, they're like the stitches in a piece of clothing or the knots in a fishing net. If you take them out, the whole landscape unravels. So to sort of say, as the EPA has said now, that ephemeral streams... that is, you know, ones that don't flow except in particular circumstances aren't protected, is to sort of make a distinction that doesn't make sense ecologically or sort of biophysically, certainly not hydrologically or with regard to where pollution is flowing. It's a very significant reversal from both the Obama rule but also the 2006 Supreme Court decision in which Justice Kennedy was very clear that in order to protect the chemical, physical, biotic integrity of the nation's waters, which is the job that Congress gave EPA, you have to prevent any changes that are relevant to that chemical, physical, and biotic integrity. And that can include things that obviously are dealing with ephemeral streams, but may go even further afield.
We're talking with Morgan Robertson about water quality, discussing new regulations under the Trump administration. Stricter measures were put in place by President Obama and also the legacy of the Clean Water Act. I'm Keely Boltina. Your thoughts welcome. 800-642-1234. This is The Morning Show. Environmental advocates are concerned that new regulations from the Trump administration open up waterways to pollution. The rule change comes in part to promote economic development. And the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce Group supports it, saying it shows the state regulates certain waterways instead of leaving it to the feds. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're speaking with Morgan Robertson. He's a professor at UW-Madison's Department of Geography and used to work for the EPA in Washington. Still time for you to weigh in at 800-642-1234. And now we want to bring Mike from Wanakee into the conversation. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I just want to comment about the regulations and the fact that the regulations are there to protect the public interest. They're there to protect the people from, you know, having their water tables damaged, having everything polluted. And I hear the argument all the time from conservatives about, well, you know, regulations are bad for business. It makes it harder. It makes it more expensive. It should be harder and it should be more expensive to pollute the environment. This water is relied upon for people for drinking. It's relied upon for, you know, for fish so that we have fish that we can catch. It's relied upon for so many things. And you know what? If a business goes under, who cares? But, you know, 50 to 100 years down the line, we're not going to have drinkable water. That's the problem.
All right, Mike. Thanks for that perspective. Mike brings up some of the concerns. Clearly, you know, Mike is clear about his perspective. But we do see the EPA's old regulations catching some flack for, especially on these small bodies of water, being too expensive, being unnecessary. I mean, are there some complaints that are justified here?
Well, the authors of almost all of the major sort of pillars of environmentalist legislation in the federal government in the 1970s foresaw exactly that argument and said, yeah, that's right. Actually, if you're causing unacceptable damage to the public good, you're going to have to lump it. There are certain things which simply can't be allowed anymore, and it may cause you to go out of business. I mean, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, these are all written with that expressly in mind. Now, that argument, the door to that wasn't fully closed and has continued to be reopened over the years. And so now we see exactly these arguments that, you know, the very reasons that Nixon vetoed the Clean Water Act and was overridden by Congress was the effect on business, the costs to American industry. And that argument doesn't go away. What's interesting, though, is that the Clean Water Act itself has stimulated a huge business in environmental restoration. I mean, the business of providing credits to somebody who might, if I fill a wetlands because I'm building a housing development, I'll go ahead and get the permit probably, but they will require me to replace an equivalent or greater area of wetlands, and that's called wetland compensation. And I can do that myself, or I can go to a wetland banker who has gone out and created, you know, an acreage of compensation that I can then purchase from them and have it be done with very quickly. That business is like a $5 billion business in 2018. That's a huge part of the kind of green economy that is now threatened. What are the bankers going to do when nobody has to come to them anymore for credits? It's not clear to me. And, you know, they've been quite happy to lobby the government in the Bush administration, in the Obama administration, for more extensive regulations for precisely this reason.
Let's go ahead and bring in Lloyd in Athens to the conversation now. Lloyd, thank you for your time today.
Hello.
Hi, Lloyd. Let's try again. It was hard to hear you. Go ahead and ask your question or share your story.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yep, you're good to go.
Okay. I'm a maple syrup producer, and our industry now uses reverse osmosis machines to remove most of the water from the maple sap, which saves a lot of energy. Now, these machines are designed to produce pure water, and that is what we're disposing of and keeping the rest to boil down. I'm now required to obtain permits to dispose of this absolutely pure water. And I was told by an inspector that the reason for this is that someplace, sometime, this water had been put into a stream and it killed fish because it's pure, has no nutrients and no oxygen. I find this hard to believe, but it's a theory. Anyway, I would say that's an overreach by the government. Thank you.
All right, Lloyd, thanks for sharing your individual story with syrup production. So Lloyd is experiencing some of these regulations because he's got a byproduct after he's made something. He says it's pure water, but he has to get a permit to release it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of the waste program, and that's handled by the state of Wisconsin. The issuance of these discharge permits is devolved to the states in most cases. It's part of the Clean Water Act, but it's executed by the state. So he's getting a permit from the state. And because we lack numeric criteria, that is sort of exact, numerically precise criteria for most pollutants that could be in industrial discharge, the issuing of those permits is, it's often a matter of case-by-case analysis. Now, I don't know anything about the maple industry, and I don't know what they might have found or why they might have made that decision, but the DNR is exceptionally good at doing this job, and, there's some water quality, and that's defined by the state, by the way. The state sets its own water quality criteria. So the state has determined in some way that there's a problem, and it's hard to know from my perspective what that might be.
We're talking to Morgan Robertson, a former EPA staff member who helped draft and we're talking about the wetlands compensation rule, and we're also discussing changes under the Clean Water Act with the Trump administration, a rule change as far as really small, some isolated wetlands, some intermittent streams. And we're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Morgan, you helped draft the wetlands regulations when you worked for the EPA, and I wonder if you can help us understand more the process of making the rules, because I don't think people always feel heard, and there are these layers of state and federal regulations that kind of get all mixed together.
It was a fascinating process and kind of a peak experience in a way. I look back on that as a period of just intense professional satisfaction, because the people who worked at EPA and the Corps of Engineers, we drafted the rule together, were just so wonderful and committed and smart and amazingly good at their job. I left D.C. less cynical than I arrived, and that's not supposed to happen. It really is pretty mundane in a way. It's three people sitting in a room and trying to take advice from across the country. We're constantly in communication with regional staff about how can this rule not cause problems in Alaska or Wisconsin or Florida. You know, checking in with stakeholders, with congressional interests. I mean, we'd get called to the Hill to sort of, you know, have staffers sort of say, what's going on over there with this rule? But it's, you know, it's it really boils down to the commitment of some really smart, amazing professionals who are still there. All the people I worked with at EPA on that rule are still there. There's a sort of sense of like some exodus of expertise. It's not happening in the wellness program as much as maybe perhaps other areas.
We've had callers talking about, you know, Chris from Juneau is talking about the fact that Chris supports regulation to prevent pollution and runoff, but not at the expense of homeowners and businesses. We've talked about developers. We've talked about farmers. But I really want to understand why people who don't work in those industries or don't rely on those for their livelihood should be invested in these conversations, regardless of where they fall.
Well, we mentioned the public good earlier, and everybody does drink water, I hope. One of the things that, you know, the water system does for us is provide a basic ingredient of public health, which is clean, drinkable water. Wisconsinites get their water from the ground, for the most part. Some of the lakeshore cities get it from the lake. Wetlands especially are the areas where water, you know, surface water enters the ground or is discharged from it. Or in wetlands, as the previous caller noted, are areas where that water is purified and nutrients removed, especially the nutrient pollution problem, the nitrate problem in this state is becoming very, very serious. And wetlands are one of the best natural ways for removing nitrates. So, I mean, to the extent that you're a water consumer or, you know, or have family issues, especially in rural areas where your well water is not required to be tested on a private well, you should be very interested in the health of the water system throughout the state. It's just public health infrastructure of the most vital kind.
Do you expect we'll see changes to the EPA's new rule? Look into your crystal ball.
I think we're seeing immediate court challenges. I mean, one of the things that Trump administration is tended to do is to issue rules that are extraordinarily vulnerable to court challenge because they've been put together in a somewhat arbitrary way. But the political win has been notched, and then he's quite happy to let you know, policy nerds like myself kind of get very frustrated and fight it out in courts while they move on to the next thing. That's what I see so far.
All right. We'll keep an eye on the courts then. Morgan, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
It was Morgan Robertson, a professor in the UW-Madison Department of Geography. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.